From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 105, recorded live Wednesday, March 19th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with developer Rocky Lotka about the myriad of choices available for accessing data in your application and business objects.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting here at Mix08 with Rocky Lotka, author of CSLA.net and Object Luminary. I just made that up.
Well, thank you. That was nice. Well,
thanks for hanging out with me here today. We were talking earlier about this kind of cacophony, this large amount of talk going around about how to get information out of databases. It's DAL, it's data access layer mania right now. We've got link to SQL, link to entities, we've got ORM mappers like the Wilson mapper, and we've got nHibernate, and we've got CSLA.net. Are there really this many ways to get information out of a database and into an object?
Apparently.
Do I need that many ways?
I can't believe that anybody could need this many ways, no. I think that we settled on a pattern in the late 90s with ADO.
Right.
Where we said, well, there's connections, commands, parameters. And ADO.net mm-hmm. really carried that forward.
Totally.
And you know, that at that level, nobody seems to be arguing anymore, right? Everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You know, most people will do a code generator like CodeSmith.
Yep.
They'll point at a database. They'll use SQL Data Reader. And you'll see a lot of code that's like, I call it left-hand, right-hand, you know, object on the left, database on the right, or database on the right, object on the left.
Yep, right.
And they'll basically go and say, first name is data reader at zero. And they'll just do that. It's very rote, boring code.
Yeah, there is not a whole lot of fun to it. And yet, if you're using the direct connection command data reader,
mm-hmm.
oh, it's fast.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because, I mean, you're as close to the bottom as you can get in .NET, mm-hmm. and it's very, very fast. And if you even if you have to write the code, it's not hard. It's just boring.
Right.
And if you code gen it, you know, and so I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the data set.
Right. Which then brought this kind of not quite a database into memory.
Yep.
And let us query it.
And that's not bad. I mean, it was like the record set, result set, whatever from the 90s, only kind of on steroids, really.
Yeah.
I mean, a really nice, complete implementation.
Right. We used to call it, we had ADO disconnected record sets before
yes.
that.
Mm-hmm. And so this was, basically that same thing, only better, mm-hmm. more powerful. And yet at the same time, it turns out that the data sets are kind of heavy, especially in an N-tier setting. And they aren't super flexible,
mm-hmm.
you know, so and don't offer. And then, of course, people like me are running around telling everybody, well, you should really be using objects.
Right, right.
And so then there's this conflict with objects and data sets, and do I get a data set and then put the data in an object, or do I have my
right.
objects hold data sets? But I think we're kind of collectively arriving at the point now where we're saying, well, we don't really necessarily need the data set, especially with link.
Mm-hmm.
And not
although
link
we
to,
do have things like link to data set. I mean, there's ways to
That's true. But, I mean, you can't just ignore the past either.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you can't just wake up one day and go, oh, yeah, all that code you've been writing for the past 7 years or five, or what, you know, throw it away.
Yeah.
You can't do that, especially if you're Microsoft, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so you have to have that to bridge. But the reality is that link, and I don't mean link to SQL, I mean link to objects, basically.
Mm-hmm. Link as a structured, non-tunneled way to query objects, right? I mean,
exactly.
Non-tunneled in the sense that the syntax doesn't live in a string.
Yep, exactly. And so at that level, link gives you everything that you wanted out of a data set, sorting, filtering, but it does it in a much bigger, better, more flexible manner,
mm-hmm.
right? And lets you join across multiple data sources and all sorts of other cool stuff.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, yeah, the data set's not so, you know, even attractive anymore because it doesn't offer any value that you couldn't have gotten better through
right.
Link. Right.
Right.
And so now I think you start to say, well, all these people that have been running around for a long time now building object relational mapping, ORM tools, like Paul Wilson or, you know, a lot of these things that take data out of the database and give it to you in an object form,
mm-hmm.
Start to look even more attractive.
Right, because before you would get these objects, like at my last company, we built a code generator. We were actually pulling it out of a database into a system. It lived as angle brackets for a moment and then into objects. And we found that once we got those objects, we were always trying to query them because the data didn't come back exactly the way we wanted it.
Yep, right.
And, of course, Link solves that problem. So anything that brings something back as an object is suddenly not only attractive but very viable.
Yep. And so then I think you start looking at all these different third-party ORMs, open source or not,
mm-hmm.
some of which have been around for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Microsoft, certainly Link and the Entity Framework are not their first run at this, but it's the first run that's actually made it out, right?
Right.
At least Link.
Yeah.
The Entity Framework isn't technically out yet, so, you know.
Any minute now.
Arguably it could go away, but...
Yeah, sure, sure.
Let's hope not. But I think there's a commonality across all of these tools that, how to put this. So if you step back and look at the object-oriented design thing in a bigger picture,
right?
The object relational mapping problem is really big and very, very complicated because ideally, when you're creating your objects, you're doing it, well, of course, this is my view.
Sure.
You're going to design your objects using responsibility-driven design where the objects are defined by behaviors within a use case.
Okay.
Not by the database.
Right. And this is the issue right. about the physical layout of a relational database and those things like, you know, how cardinality works and those things that are very much database-focused things and how
right.
entities relate to each other is very different from how an object graph works. And very often, if you're an object person, you think about modeling your system in terms of objects because you want those objects to reflect a logical reality.
Yes, that's right.
Not the physical reality of the database.
Yep. And so you end up in all sorts of weird, almost cognitive dissonance type things, especially if you're a data person.
There's an impedance mismatch there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and that's David Taylor, I think, coined that term in a book.
Oh, really?
It's
yep. It seems like it's in the ether. It's one of those things
yep.
that's just out there.
Yeah. His very nice thin book called Object-Oriented Technology, A Manager's Guide, and wrote it, I don't know, early 90s, I think.
Really?
It's a great read, even if you're a developer. Even though it says it's a manager's book, it's a good book to read because it's got a lot of great concept stuff.
Yeah.
But, and he talks about this, what we're talking about here, right? And so the limitation with all of these ORM tools is that they create objects that look like data structures.
Right.
And that's not bad, right? Because it's a whole lot easier to deal with data-looking objects than data sets or whatever, right?
Right.
It's a huge step forward. But it still doesn't really get you where you want to be, which is just directly mapping data from a database into logical objects that reflect your use cases.
Right.
So like CSLA, for instance, sits at that top level. My whole goal with CSLA is to enable you to build object models that reflect your use cases.
So you explicitly kind of eschew the idea that this is a direct mapping from the database, and you really want it to look more like. It's not bottom up. It's not from the database up. It's from the business problem in.
That would be the ideal.
Okay.
And a lot of people use CSLA to create effectively entity objects.
Okay.
And it works for that, but that's not why I'm creating it. It's not what I think people should do.
Well, I assume you made it because you needed to use it for work.
Well, that's true, right?
Right.
And but I also am kind of a purist, and I try not to be.
I have heard that you're a bit of a purist.
So I look at this and I say, well, all of the, N-Hibernate, Entity Framework, Link to SQL, all these things, are beautiful replacements for ADO.NET sitting behind CSLA. You know, in my world.
Yeah, sure. In a world where everyone uses your tool,
sure,
that's how it works.
You know, but you know, honestly, if you're creating services, so you're the author of services, you maybe don't need a lot of rich business object, domain object type stuff like CSLA gives you. And so you might just directly build your service on top of a set of, you know, link to SQL or entity or, you know, whatever.
Okay, well, this is a good point. Let me back up for a second. I'm going to put this in concrete terms so we don't lose people. With link to SQL, I sit in Visual Studio, I go file new application, I see my database in the Server Explorer, and I drag a few tables over. Mm-hmm. And then magically, I get a product object and a category object. And it looks a lot like the database.
Yes.
That happens in a Visual Designer, and there's code generation that happens in the background. Mm-hmm. They give me CRUD. They give me create, read, update, and delete, and a philosophy that very, very much reflects the physicality of the database. Link to entities in the entity framework gives you a slightly different design service that allows you to have an additional layer of abstraction, as well as a little bit deeper stack. And I could have, for example, a products object that went to three or four tables in the database rather than one. So then there's and then link to those objects. So I get these objects. I can run link queries on them after the fact. With link to SQL, I can run link queries, and SQL is generated. I get a free DAL, a free database access layer. That's the perception.
Right.
But then we start thinking about layers versus tiers. And I usually use the term that a layer is a logical thing,
mm-hmm.
and a tier is a physical thing, meaning that this object exists on that machine over there. And now we're talking about services.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin, the producer of Hansel Minutes, with a message from Telerik. Do you know how to build Web 2.0 AJAX applications with Web 1.0 components? Right. You just can't. In order to have next-generation web apps, you need next-generation components. And that's exactly what our friends at Telerik have for you. Their upcoming product, codenamed Rad Controls Prometheus, is a huge pack of web controls built on top of Microsoft ASP.NET AJAX, which will add previously impossible performance and interactivity to your next project. Just listen to this. The new controls mirror the ASP.NET AJAX API, so development is straightforward. Client scripts are shared, so loading time is pretty much instant. And if you just set a couple of properties, you'll be able to automatically bind to web services for even more efficient operation. After all, the facts speak for themselves. The new RAD editor for ASP.NET AJAX loads up to 4 times faster than before. Similarly, RAD Grid handles thousands of records in mere milliseconds. But again, it's best to try for yourself. Visit Telerik.com/ASP.NET AJAX and download a trial. And don't forget to thank them for supporting Hansel Minutes.
So link to SQL doesn't initially lend itself to being in an alternative tier by itself. You can't just push a button and say, now you can be in the business tier of a whole series of other machines.
No, that's right.
Then you start thinking about things like what was codenamed Astoria, having data services that live in an alternative tier.
Yes.
That was the ADO.NET data services, which I suppose we'll have to do a whole other show about.
Yep, but that's cool stuff.
So that stuff I understand. So with CSLA, what do I do?
Well, in the CSLA worldview, the
when I sit down, I go file new, and I have a database, what happens? Or do I have a database?
What I've been doing lately is I create my CSLA objects, my business objects, using, again, responsibility, use case design, you know. And
there's tooling for this, I assume.
Well, not so much.
Oh, really? Okay, so how am I making these objects?
Visual Studio is your friend.
Oh, okay. So I write the code myself.
Yeah, you gotta like writing code. Now, to be fair, though, there are quite a set of code generators for CSLA. CodeSmith has got some templates. My generation, there's a couple commercial offerings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can go open source or commercial to buy generators that'll create a lot of the code for you for these business objects.
Okay, and what about them? I know what link to SQL objects look like. What about them makes them special? They implement an interface, they have attributes, they derive from certain base classes.
Well, there's really two things that CSLA does at a high level. One is that it supports the creation of a rich user interface through the support for data binding, integrated support for a validation business rule engine, and an authorization engine. And so all of these things, when you build a business object using CSLA, the object ends up encapsulating not only data, but more importantly, behaviors, including things like validation rules, calculations, authorization, even down to the property level. And then when you bind these objects, especially to Windows Forms, where the data binding is really robust,
right?
Then you automatically get all of this data binding support, so that as the user tabs off each field, that field value is validated. If it's incorrect, you get the error provider icon. If they're not authorized to see it, they won't see it. If they're not authorized to change it, they'll see it, but they can't edit it. And this is just all essentially automatic. There's very little code in the UI to do that. And they also support web forms data binding, which isn't quite as robust, as Windows, but but the same object can be used behind Windows or web.
Seems like there could be some really cool stuff with ASP.NET MVC and CSLA working together. So this is interesting. So the fact that you're bringing up all of these very very user-focused and very user-interface-focused things makes me really understand the separation between CSLA. It's not a DAL. They really are business objects, and they touch, as I like to say, they touch the glass of the user's experience. They're literally touching the monitor, because these objects are talking to the fields that they interact with directly. I wouldn't
through data binding anyway.
Through data binding.
I mean, going back to what you were saying about layering, there's a presentation layer. That could be web, Windows, WPF.
Right.
I'm working on a CSLA for Silverlight. So, in the relatively near future, it could be Silverlight.
Cool.
And, so if you look at it from a model view controller perspective, the CSLA objects, the business objects, are the model.
Are they the model, or are they the view data?
Well,
because there's a lot of discussion.
It's somewhat challenging, honestly, because the
whether
MVC
or not you
model
decide you want to
has an odd way of separating things out in some sense. You've got some sort of a view that the user has,
right?
And that's a web form or a Windows form or whatever,
right?
And then you've got a controller that establishes the relationship, or the presenter, or whatever, that establishes the relationship between that view and your underlying, model.
But then the big question is whether or not you decide to pass the objects from your model through the controller and into the view, or whether you choose to transform them.
That's the trick, right?
Yeah.
And so if you like data binding, or let's flip it around, if you want to minimize the amount of code that you have to write, data binding does that for you, right? Because it does all of this hookup stuff,
right,
especially in Windows, but WPF is getting there pretty rapidly with support for error validation and so forth. And so if you're objects, I look at them as being the model. If your objects are really rich and encapsulate all of this stuff by themselves, then ideally your controller is pretty thin and just sets up the data binding relationship.
It's a coordinator.
And lets it go, right?
Exactly.
Now, yes, I realize people philosophically sometimes go, oh, we don't want to do that. Well, okay, but that just means you're writing a lot of code that Microsoft already wrote for you in the form of data binding.
But there's also a lot of philosophical questions that brings up, because a lot of people are moving towards this notion of services that are smart, that represent the verbs and the actions, while objects are really becoming, in their perception, stupider.
Yes, that's
but
right.
The more classic OO people, and I would think of you as being more of an OO practitioner,
right,
would really prefer the objects to be very intelligent.
Well,
the controller would be more of a coordinator.
See, the thing is, early in my career, I did Fortran.
Mm.
And whether you call them services or procedures, it's the same thing. And been there, done that. I don't really feel the need to go back to passing a bunch of dumb parameter data into a procedure that we now call a service, so it sounds froofy. But, and not that that's a bad model. I mean, I'm being dismissive, right?
Certainly. The thing is, pick a religion and be excited about it and respect it. And I think that people should pick what makes them happy.
I don't even know if I agree with that, because at an architectural level, there are really good reasons why you might use the kinds of objects that CSLA enables.
Well, that's a very dogmatic view, though.
Well, it is, but it's true. And then there are also really good reasons why you would go down a service approach. Right.
There are, yeah.
And in any mid to large size system, odds are you're going to need some of each.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
true.
It's kind of naive to think that you're going to I'm only objects, right?
That's a very valid point. It really is about picking the right tool for the solution. I mean, I tend to lean a little more towards the service side, but then I tend to work on large systems. So, if I were to go and write some tray icon that did something in WinForms, if I try to design it like a large service-oriented system, I probably would not succeed.
Well, and I think even if you're creating a true service-oriented, message-based asynchronous system, at the edge, you still have to give the user a good experience.
Yeah.
And that means that at the edge, you have to have some level of business logic running as close to the user as you possibly can. Because your only alternative otherwise is that the user is going to enter the data, and then you have to route it through probably some relatively expensive services to find out if the data was any good. Or right, that's bad.
Yeah.
And so even if you become totally SOA, something like CSLA with its rich objects that do all the validation and all this other cool stuff, almost for free at the UI level, are really good to create the applications that are at the edge. And then instead of talking to a database, they just talk to a bunch of services.
Okay.
Right, so it's kind of, I still see that as a very natural fit.
Okay. So trying to bring it full circle, where does CSLA fit in a world where I have linked to SQL? Is it, it's downstream, and linked to SQL is the DAL that feeds the CSLA objects?
Although I would actually flip it around, because I always see the objects as the center of the universe.
Okay. Okay. So
you build your objects.
You build your objects.
Your domain objects.
So the way you want it to look.
Yeah, based on your use cases and exactly. And those objects then support ideally any of your UI options, Windows, Web, WPF, Silverlight.
Okay.
And then they consume their data, right? They do their CRUD operations basically using some sort of data access layer. And linked to SQL is, in my view, a really great way to build that data access layer. That's what I've been doing lately. And, it's got that beautiful designer. Mm-hmm. It's got stored procedure support. And so you've got this really nice, easy way of sitting down and creating a DAL with very little effort.
Do you have some example apps? Have you done the Canonical app, the Northwind app, the AdventureWorks app?
I've got a reference app for CSLA called Project Tracker.
That uses SQL?
The current version of it. Because I'm just about to release CSLA version 3.5 within the next, say, month or so.
Cool.
And so the Project Tracker reference app actually does all the things that I'm talking about here and does, in fact, use Link to SQL for its DAL.
Very cool. Okay. But doesn't this feel like, I mean, I know that these are complex systems and there's a lot of work to be done, but I think I would spend a lot of time writing left-hand, right-hand code as I take object B and put bits into object A. It seems a little tedious as I'm shuffling stuff back and forth. I mean, I see that I get a lot of benefits once I get these into a CSLA object.
Right.
I see that I get a lot of benefits when I put these into a CSLA object, but I still have these other objects sitting around, and it just doesn't feel very tidy to me. Is that just something I need to get over?
Well, I think so, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I
don't even think of the link to SQL objects as being objects because I didn't write them. They don't even, to me, they don't look like objects. They're entities that are in memory. I mean, in fact, I do these really cool link select statements, and I get back stuff.
Hmm.
And it is true that you've got to copy those values then. But we're back to something that can be code generated.
Right, you're right. So you're basically saying don't fool yourself, even though they look like objects, that these are not your business objects.
Right. Well, and I think this is the thing, that if you really buy into responsibility-driven design, then every object has exactly one responsibility. And those objects that Link to SQL is creating for you, they have a responsibility too, which is to be shaped containers for data, which is a great responsibility. I love it. But it's not the same as a responsibility such as representing a customer and all of the associated validation rules, right? Or representing a sales order with all of its line items and pricing. And that's a whole different thing than just representing something that contains data.
Is there anything that you've done to CSLA to make the objects that you produce more friendly to Link, or are they Link-enabled by default?
Well, one of the big things with CSLA 3.5 is adding some support for Link. And it's kind of a we're talking linked objects at
right,
this point.
Right, and I'm wondering if then that blurs the line and makes it more difficult to...
Well, so it's an interesting thing because CSLA includes a pretty rich collection type. So not only to support data binding and in-place editing and grids and all that sort of thing, but it understands and interacts with its child objects. And so an object that belongs to a collection, you know, there's a relationship there. And so when you just pop along with link and do a select statement against one of these collections, you get back, there's two ways, right? A projection or non-projection.
Maybe you can explain that to the listeners.
A projection query is where you might do a select and then you're only pulling out two or three properties, mm-hmm. Not the whole thing.
Right.
And
making an anonymous object.
And in that case, yeah, they create for you an anonymous object and a new list. Mm-hmm. And that's all cool.
Right.
That's really slick.
And that would lend itself to then being bound to something within a...
It does, although the data binding...
Only one way.
The data binding that you get is not as rich, yeah. But where it gets tricky... is if you do a non-projection query. So when you do your select, you're maybe doing a filter or something,
mm-hmm.
but you select the whole object, the mm-hmm. child object out of the collection.
Right.
Well, that child object, what you get back from link then, is an IEnumerable of that type.
Of a CSLA type, which is enabled for all
of those
goodness.
Child objects, which have a relationship with their parent container, the original list, and obviously have no relationship to a raw IEnumerable of T. And so then you get into these weird things like, so then what do? You take that IEnumerable of T and maybe you bind it to a grid
mm-hmm.
and the user starts entering new rows in the grid.
Right.
And they get added to the IEnumerable, but they don't get added to the real list. And then when you go to save your original list, this data didn't save. And you're sitting here going, oh, the user added them. Why didn't they get saved?
It feels like it ought to work. How are you going to enable a scenario like that?
Well, so the... Basically, CSLA now, when you do a non-projection query against a CSLA list, what you get back is a rich IEnumerable of T that understands the CSLA relationships. And so it's actually a live view of the original list that's sorted, filtered, or whatever, based on your query. And so now when the user, for instance, adds or removes rows in this list, it adds it to the view, but it also adds it to the original list. And so you get this kind of transparent flow through. And I'm not the only one working on this sort of thing. And in fact, much of what I'm describing was written by a colleague of mine, Aaron Erickson, who also works for Magenic.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron wrote a thing, an indexed link service. So he, it's an open source project on CodePlex, or it just adds indexing to link queries against objects. But there's a couple other people that are doing synchronized link queries, similar to what I'm talking about.
Well, sync link.
Like sync link, and is it concurrent or continuous link? Maybe it's continuous link is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple projects along this line. They're doing much more than I'm doing. They're being much more aggressive. All I wanted to do was solve this
one
collection problem.
So I'll put all that information in the show notes. And where do people go and find more about CSLA?
www.lhotka.net.
Can you spell that?
It's LHOTKA.net.
Cool. I'll put all that up in the show notes. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me here at Mix. Rocky Lhotka, and this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'll see you again next week.